Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 13, text 22. Is translation required? Purushah prakriti stohi,
Purushah prakriti stohi,
Bhunkte prakriti jangunan,
Bhunkte prakriti jangunan,
Karanam guna sangosya,
Karanam guna sangosya,
Sadasadyo nijanmasu,
Sadasadyo nijanmasu.
It's verses written neatly, clearly. Just one thing, the apostrophe before the last word on the third line shouldn't be so far away from the letter S. It doesn't look like it has any connection with it. It doesn't make any difference to pronunciation. It just indicates that the first letter of the word Asya has been dropped. Translation, the living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus, he meets with good and evil among various species. Purport. This verse is very important for an understanding of how the living entity transmigrates from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes dress. This change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material desire, the entity is born sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, as a bird, as a worm, as an aquatic, as a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. How he is put into such different bodies is explained here. It is due to association with the different modes of nature. One has to rise, therefore, above the three material modes and become situated in the transcendental position. That is called Krishna consciousness. Unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another, because he has material desires since time immemorial. But he has to change that conception. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is here. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature, and gradually and proportionately, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. In a Vedic mantra, it is said that as he becomes learned in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he proportionately relishes his eternal blissful life. Now, having read the verse from Bhagavad Gita, I'd now like to speak about Glenn Hoddle. Who has heard of Glenn Hoddle? None of you ever heard of Glenn Hoddle. Well, some years ago, he was a nationally known figure in England, a household name, you could say, and was probably known to many, his name was well known to many people, at least in Europe. His position in British society in the view of many, was second only to that of the Prime Minister. He was the manager of the England football team. So you may wonder, why are we talking about the manager of the England football team in a Bhagavad Gita class, or anywhere for that matter? Why should devotees speak about that? Well, his name appeared, a discussion of him appeared in Bhakti Godhead magazine in 1999. And that may just remove the question one step further. What on earth was Bhakti Godhead magazine doing discussing Glenn Hoddle? Well, they weren't so much discussing him as a certain statement he made, which is connected with one of the major teachings of Bhagavad Gita, surprisingly enough. It was reported in Back to Godhead magazine in 1999 that Sri Glenn Hoddle had an interview with a journalist about football. But at the end, the journalist very slyly had slipped in a question about Glenn Hoddle's belief in reincarnation. It was known that Glenn Hoddle believed in reincarnation. So the reporter asked him, well, do you think that people, for instance, physically handicapped people, or in simple English, spastics, is it because they're suffering? Are they suffering because of something they did in a previous life? And Glenn explained, he said, it's not just the spastics, it's everyone. You get, and he quoted from the Bible, you reap what you sow. So the reporter got what he wanted. He wanted to get something like this, and he made this the focus of his, this point, he made the focus of his report. He kind of seems like he tricked Glenn Hoddle. And very soon the whole of the country was against him. There was a massive outcry that how could he make such statements. The papers were saying he's gone mad, and it was because it was considered extremely cruel. Spastics are objects of pity. It's not, you know, they're just born like that. It's just their bad luck. And why do you see then, many of them are very nice people. They didn't do any harm to anyone. It's just bad luck, right? And to say that they are the cause of their own misfortune is so cruel on the part of Glenn Hoddle. It caused an outcry, and notwithstanding his capabilities, I don't know what kind of a manager he was, but he wouldn't have been sacked from the post. But he was forced to resign under the outcry. So surprising, actually, that someone is an ex-footballer. I think when I was a kid, he was a footballer. I kind of remember his name or something. Played for Tottenham Hotspur. Some of the useless things stuck in my memory. It's kind of surprising, you might think, that people connected with football have any interest in such philosophic topics. Don't expect footballers to be very philosophical. As one devotee told me, he met with a German football team or something. He was distributing books. He came across them and said, a bunch of stupid guys. You don't expect people who kick a ball around for a living to be very thoughtful, especially have to head the ball each time. And I guess each time that diminishes their meager stock of brain cells. Of course, other people in the entertainment industry, as it's called, a very broad category, have been influential in promoting a general belief in reincarnation in the Western world. A few days ago I said that it was the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books that was largely influential in the increasing belief in reincarnation. Someone could challenge that, because I believe even before Prabhupada came to the West, there were some fairly popular books in English, which after all is the dominant world language. Some books about Buddhism had been translated or written by one Christopher Isherwood, and there was a famous book about Zen Buddhism written by, can't remember his name now, but when it was before Prabhupada published or came to the West, because he was well known, and they gave Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita for review to him. Alan Watts, that's the name, Alan Watts. I read that book as a kid. It was about Buddhism, specifically about Zen. And when Alan Watts was given this book, Bhagavad Gita as it is to review, he became very angry, because he's a demon. He believes in reincarnation, but he's a demon. Buddhist, so it's a demoniac theory. And so there have been other books. Lobsang Rampa, is he translated into Croatian?
Yes.
Populous. All these stories about the Tibetan lamas, which was found to be just completely made up, actually. But he wrote it as if it was some factual experience. And the first massive hit paperback in history was about Shangri-La, some place where it was a novel about some people, they crash in the Himalayas, some Western people in a plane crash, and then they meet the Tibetans and all that. So there are through books, and then more recently the Zen of motorcycle maintenance, and then so through various books and movies have featured reincarnation. Years ago, there must be many, many more, but years ago, Nrsimhananda Prabhu, our godbrother at ISKCON Television in Los Angeles, made a movie showing how reincarnation is featured in the movies. But this was a long time ago. There must be many, many more since then. I remember there was one clip, it was a comedy. And one man in a bar was explaining to another about reincarnation. He said, that, see, if you do good works, you get born in an elevated state. And the man said, oh yeah, yeah, like Colorado, right? Because Colorado, the physical elevation is high. And there was a lot of featuring. There was a whole movie made about someone from a previous life, and then they came back in the next life, or something like that. I can't remember. Anyway. Yeah, I remember as a kid also watching on TV some program about some Tibetan guy just passing away and laughing as he passed away and all this. So I guess it's not exactly the same as science fiction, which is just... Well, that also has the effect of making people believe that such things are possible. And this science fiction idea of aliens invading Earth, which was way back in the 1930s or something, that was there was a major crisis in America, a one-day crisis, when they had a radio program about the aliens invading from Mars or something, and people thought it was real.
'46
was it, just after the Second World War. People thought it was real. But recently, within this year, the most, the most respected scientist in the world at the present time, Stephen Hawking, said, well, it's almost certain there are aliens out there. So it's become accepted science. But there's a difference between that and reincarnation, or belief in reincarnation. I'm just comparing them because they're new concepts for the Western world, and at one time considered bizarre. But there's a difference in that reincarnation is the accepted, or it's the basis of a worldview accepted by a lot of people. Hindus, Jains, most Hindus believe in reincarnation. Jains, Buddhists, Sikhs, that's a lot of people. And there is an ancient body of literature and teachings discussing all this, and it's not just some new Lobsang Rampa stories, but there are within the Puranas and Mahabharata and Buddhist literature, and there's the there's a whole huge number of stories in India also, which are based on the principle of reincarnation. We have, for instance, one out of thousands, this story within Mahabharata, the story of Amba becoming Shikhandi in her next life. So there is a whole philosophical understanding behind it. Now, the outrage against Glenn Hoddle, if we analyze that a bit more, why are they so upset? They're saying, well, the prevalent worldview is that, well, we only have one life and we just got it, whatever we are. Either Christians, of whom there aren't that many in Britain today, they believe, well, God made you like that. Exactly why God would make someone like a spastic and someone else like some good-looking, healthy man or woman. They don't really think about that too much, it seems. Or the other, it seems to be more prevalent worldview, although people don't really think about it philosophically, but they just kind of believe it without even thinking what they believe. They just go through life like animals, actually, most people, without even really thinking about what's going on. So the prevalent worldview is based on Darwinism, which is one of the many strands of thought or genres of thought, which comes under the demoniac worldview described by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Asatyam apratishtam te jagad ahura nishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. This is a very important verse. We have in the 16th chapter a description of the demons, but this one in particular gives the whole basis of why they're demons. And most of the chapter is about how nasty they are in various ways, but this verse describes what is their prevalent worldview, that there is no ultimate truth, there is no underlying principle to anything, there is no God in control. And you want to have any philosophy? Well, just enjoy yourself, that's all. That's the cause and meaning of everything. So it's Darwinism means meaninglessness. There is no real meaning to life, there's just a bunch of chemicals, and they all got together and here we are, and we can manipulate the chemicals and make footballs and things like that and enjoy ourselves kicking around a football. There's so many other things. So it's an extremely shallow worldview. You might ask, well, if everything's meaningless, well, if it's only just a bunch of chemicals, so why should you bother whether chemicals are in a spastic shape or any other shape? Or why should you worry about, you're worried about hurting the feelings of the spastics?
Well, I didn't do anything wrong. I just got born like this.
then why should you bother about their feelings anyway? Because that's also just another meaningless interaction of chemicals. Of course, Christians, they believe that, well, God made everything, all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. Of course, he also made spastics. That's a bit of a problem. You don't, the hymns that we learned at school, we don't hear that all things perverted and perverse, all spastics and mentally retarded people, all the stool, it was all made by God. They don't sing hymns like that because they like to see basically they want to see this world as a place of enjoyment, and if we're good, we'll go to heaven, which will be more or less like here. The great English theologian C.S. Lewis gave his description of England. It's just like heaven. Sorry, it's just like England. It must be right. Maybe a little warmer and less rain, and the football team wins sometimes. I don't think they had national football teams at the time here. They didn't bother so much, I didn't bother. So, we don't need this light on, turn it off. Yeah. So, it's also a very, the idea that God just made us, like just, you know, God has a lottery or something. Okay, you have a beautiful body, and you are a spastic. God, Einstein didn't accept that idea. God said, I don't believe God is playing dice with the universe. Oh, I was going to talk about that point, entertainers, cinema. One also major medium of promotion of the idea of reincarnation is popular singers. I don't know, I've been out of touch with it for so long, but I presume there are many popular singers. George Harrison. He believed in reincarnation. And some of his records were very influential, actually. All Things Must Pass, Living in the Material World, My Sweet Lord. I guess some of his songs must have addressed directly reincarnation. It was known that he believed in that. So these people have become influential. But there's very few people with any clear idea of how it actually works. Even the Buddhists have a very hard time to explain reincarnation within Buddhist philosophy, because for them there is nothing. There's no real existence of anything. So the idea of an Atma, just as described in this verse, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Janguna, that the Atma is stuck in material nature and gets different sat, nice, and asat, not so nice, like spastic bodies. The Buddhism can't accept that, so they have all kinds. Within a short time of Buddha's disappearance, because he didn't really talk very much about anything. He did talk a lot, but he didn't really give a very broad philosophy. Because if your philosophy is that there's nothing, everything, there is nothing anyway, or maybe that came later, but basically he was a moral teacher. He was trying to get people to be. He didn't speak about God. We say people don't believe in God. He didn't speak about God, and so they were left with this whole thing of all these people who didn't want to believe in the Vedas, but at the same time they had some kind of belief system which was supposed to regulate their lives, and they had to fill in the gaps. And that's true with Christianity also, and Islam, that after Christ, immediately Paul started filling in so many teachings which were not given by Jesus. And you know, how much can one person give, especially only in 3 years, and he wasn't systematically teaching anyone. And same in Islam, all their legal system and so many things came later, and it took a few hundred years in both the cases, in the case of both Islam and Christianity and Buddhism to make something resembling a philosophical system. And there are various ones came out also. Whereas the Vedic literature, the Vedic culture is different because it didn't begin at any particular point in time and has from all the time it has a massive body in literature. It's not founded by any one particular person. But it has, there just like Prabhupada came and taught, and even though he didn't teach every single facet of philosophy or how to live life, which is, you know, it's a huge, so many points, but he gave us the background. There's the Vedic literature and culture, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So just like, for instance, someone asked me the other day, is it sinful to feed toddlers grains on Ekadashi? As far as I know, Prabhupada didn't answer that question. But we have the answer, because they're in Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is, again, redacted from various Vedic literatures. So we don't have that problem. Buddhism has a problem trying to explain reincarnation. Or trying to explain anything for that matter. So one theory in Buddhism, among the many schools, is that the fact that there's, you see, a philosophical problem. If everything is nothing, then how is there any continuity? Remember yesterday morning? What were you doing yesterday morning? Can anyone say what we were doing yesterday morning? You're cleaning the yard, right? You're cleaning outside? Okay, well, if you're nothing and everything is nothing, how can there be any continuity between then and now that you can remember that you existed even, or even to speak one sentence? If nothing exists, then the sound at the beginning of the sentence has no connection with that at the end. There's just nothing, nothing. So one Buddhist theory is that at every moment, everything is dissolved, and then somehow or other it all comes back together again. And there's a sense of continuity, although actually there's nothing really there. It gets pretty bizarre. Yeah, the Vedic literature, in Bhagavad Gita, here we have one of the many verses which explains how this all takes place, and why and how. Because others, they may have some belief in it, but it's, they don't really know anything. And people, in the Western world, it's such a pathetic situation that they think that religious belief. There's just that belief. I don't think we'll find anywhere except in Prabhupada's books about spiritual knowledge. They don't consider spiritual subjects to be knowledge. It's just what you believe. Maybe you gave me one video I saw, BBC production, about what does the world believe about God? And they had they're interviewing all these people, including Imran Khan, who's a famous name, even now, although he retired from cricket. He's not a football star, he's a cricket star. He was one of the greatest cricketers of all time, Pakistani. But he's a politician also, so he's still in the news now and then. So he was there, representing Islam, and then there was the Bishop of Liverpool, and he was a Catholic bishop, and the topic of football came up in England, any discussion. It's like, you know, there was someone talking about, in the course of the discussion, there it came up that David Beckham, I think even all of you down here have heard of, who's just like some ridiculously famous ex-footballer, is he still playing? Maybe. They rated him, about 40% of the people in Britain rated him higher than God, something like that. And then the Bishop of Liverpool said, well, we have our good football teams in Liverpool too, because well known that Liverpool fans hate Manchester United fans, who David Beckham played for, and vice versa. Anyway, I'm just giving some insights into the triviality of it all. And there was there were a group of people, and they had interviews from all over the world going on, and the compare gave each person about 29 and a half seconds to speak. And what's your opinion? What's your opinion? And it just, such an important question, and they're just taking people's opinions and giving them 20 seconds or so to speak. And what are the qualifications of the people to speak? I mean, a cricketer turned politician, he's a Muslim, okay, believes in God, but how much has he studied anyway? They take it as such a trivial thing. I mean, just taking different people's opinions and then just comparing their different opinions as if it's just some matter of opinion. Such an important question, and they had atheists, of course, also there. Such an important question, and they take it so trivially that you can just make some glib statements, and that's it. And then you'll understand more about God. But we find in Vedic literature, it's again and again mentioned here in Bhagavad Gita, the word vijnana, the science of spiritual knowledge. But people just take it as some kind of belief, or they take it as something so inscrutable that you can't even think about it. And one nun on the show, she was on this BBC show, just kept on saying, "Oh, it's all just words, you can't understand with words." It's then as if it's just something totally non-understandable. And then and then you get the atheists who say, well, you know, they think they've got a much more intelligent view of life, because the subject of God and the soul is so unintelligently presented that people who consider themselves intelligent, many people who consider them intelligent, think that this is just childish. It's like as Richard Dawkins, who's maybe the second most respected, well, he's another famous English scientist. he repeatedly says that, well, belief in God, it's like believing in fairies and Santa Claus. It's just some kind of childish idea. Bhakti Charu Swami told me a few years ago, he was invited to an international conference on reincarnation in Switzerland. And the Dalai Lama was there, and a few, you know, some people. But he said that he was the only one there who had anything coherent to say. They just didn't. And he said that was quite obvious to everyone there, because they didn't have anything tangible. They didn't know anything. All they could say was that they could talk about things like this. Dr. Ian Stevenson's experiments, which, if people were actually open-minded scientists, they'd have to admit that Dr. Ian Stevenson, who's now taken another body, he died a year or so ago, he had turned up enough evidence to give a good scientific background or to make a plausible case, a highly plausible case for the reality that reincarnation is a reality. So they could state things like that, but how it works, how reincarnation goes on, and why it all goes on, and how it's being regulated, no idea. Buddhism, the philosophy of meaningless, it's self-defeating if you try to explain systems. There's systematic reincarnation. Why should that be? That means if we accept karma, that someone is, as in the Buddhist stories, and actually they take all their culture is taken from the Vedic cultures. Then in Buddhism also it's believed that, just as stated here, karanam guna sangosya sadasadyoni janmasu. Not quite as clear as this, but they accept that if you do good deeds, you get good birth. If you do sinful activities, you get a sinful result. They believe in Yamaraj and everything. In Thailand, Payom means Sri Yamaraj. But that means there's meaning. How has that meaning come? is there no person who's regulating this system? Is there any? What's the ultimate goal of all this? So Buddhism, although they believe in reincarnation, it's a self-defeating philosophy. Because even to try to explain any philosophy in Buddhism is immediately self-defeating. If there's everything is nothing and there's no meaning to anything, so in it's all absurd. And then you come to Zen Buddhism, which thrives on absurdity, with such koans, as they're called. Koan means, you know, that means it means like a meaningless saying, which you're supposed to meditate on. The most famous being the sound of meditate on the sound of one hand clapping, and then you meditate on this and meditate on this, and when you fall asleep, someone comes and slaps you hard on the head. Or even if you don't fall asleep, even if your back isn't super straight, they come and smash you. And then all of a sudden you're ding, the sound of one hand clapping, and you become self-realized. But you're not a self, so how can you become self-realized? And on and on and on. So Bhagavad Gita gives scientific knowledge of this important principle. I mean, even in India, people have no idea. They just have some vague idea about reincarnation. And they're not even very sure about that. There's no systematic dissemination of spiritual knowledge. So, from the outcry against Glenn Hoddle, we can understand what a difficult job it is to educate these mudhas. They don't like the idea because the idea that they are responsible for their actions is frightening to them because they're so irresponsible in the way they live. It seems that they're being nice. It shouldn't be bad to spastics, but they don't know what it means to be nice. Their niceness, their so-called niceness, is based on ignorance, and no one can properly help others if they're in ignorance. Another instance is the passing away of this Mother Teresa, who I've spoken about many times because it irks me that Mother Teresa is so much praised as a great saint when she was in an ignorant, meat-eating person who was trying to convert people from their acceptance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to being meat-eating Christians. I mean, the Bengalis are mostly meat-eaters anyway, but that was her ultimate aim. And so, it's like they think someone who's helping the body is a great saint, even if they're killing every day, eating bodies that have been slaughtered. And they don't even want to listen to any reasonable philosophy explaining how the universe is not meaningless and that people are spastics. They got that because of some misdeed in their immediate previous life, or maybe previous to that even. So, it's not going to be so easy. But it is possible especially by the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books. And we should teach these principles also. Srila Prabhupada went on teaching these principles. Because if people can't understand and accept this, then their life has to change. It seems that even many of our own devotees, supposed to be, they also don't really understand or accept this principle. Otherwise they wouldn't live the way they are. We are concerned that devotees are promoting all kinds of non-Krishna conscious modes of behavior and beliefs in the name of Krishna consciousness. Or they say it's okay, it doesn't matter. But it just shows they don't really understand the purpose of life and the seriousness of it. They're not really convinced that we're not the body. They put so much emphasis on the body, on bodily enjoyment, and being nice on the mundane platform. So, yeah, if this is systematically presented, then the religions based on ignorance, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, they also don't know about reincarnation. They have a vague belief in it. Buddhism, they're all based on ignorance, actually. So when real knowledge is promoted, then these glowworm-like religions will, their influence will automatically diminish. Tesham adityavajjnanam prakashyati tat param. Just like when the sun rises, then everything can be seen. So when the sun of real knowledge arises, then people can see what is the actual situation. So these, as Srila Prabhupada said, within 50 years these cheating religions will be finished. He also said that this scientific cheating will be finished. So that will come about by distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada was convinced of that. And it's not just some kind of fanaticism on his part. That distributing these books will have a tremendous effect in altering the way that people view the world, and then naturally their lifestyle will have to change also. People won't remain meat eaters if they know they're going to become slaughtered themselves in the next life. Actually, I've been thinking quite a bit about preaching among Muslims. We don't think much about that, do we? Islam is a major rising force in the world. But books like The Higher Taste, maybe not exactly in that format, but maybe adjusted a little bit to different cultures. Like in India, we should have that book in Tamil, a similar book, but it's adjusted to the circumstance. Well, first of all, but especially in Muslim countries, because, many of the reasons that people become vegetarians, mostly not for spiritual reasons, but for health reasons. And there's plenty of evidence that meat eating is not good for health. So I feel it's like a very, subversive way to enter Islamic society is to put some book like The Higher Taste and give all the reasons, health reasons, this, that, and for health, many people would like to be vegetarians. But then give the religious reasons also, what we call, and state your karma and this and that, and Bhagavad Gita. So many people, I feel this, many may like to become vegetarians for health reasons, because in the modern world, I mean, people used to eat meat like once a week, once a month at some religious festival, but now it's become daily. And some people, it's quite common 3 times a day. In this country also, 3 times a day they eat meat. It's quite common, if they can afford it. If they can afford it. And then, but the effect of ingesting so much toxic food day after day, and it's one reason why cancer is so common and other diseases. I mean, even apart from the toxins and of rotting meat and all the hormones, and but it's such high protein and difficult to digest protein, and on the whole it's not good for the body at all. So many people know that in the West, and that's one major reason for becoming vegetarians. But then many people in Islamic, this is just some kind of theory I have, so. But it's difficult to preach in those countries, no doubt, but you could, in those communities, the Muslim communities, but if that's introduced, along with that, the concept of karma can be introduced. And actually, when people become vegetarians, then it becomes easier for them to understand these things, but as long as they're meat eaters, they're grossly sinful, and they can't even begin to understand these things. And that will also give them some idea that that there is religious culture which, when you become a vegetarian, you can understand how much better it is than being a meat eater. And when they see the whole Islamic culture is based on meat eating, it's like an intrinsic part, and there is spiritual philosophy apart from that, then I think it's a very good way to enter an otherwise very difficult field. Okay, so there's a few thoughts on Karanam Guna Sangasya Sada Sadhyoni Janmasu, how we get different bodies. That's described here. How the spastics become spastics is described in this verse. So you may have thought, well, I started off talking about some ex-football coach, but it wasn't that age. It was just reading the verse and then just talking about whatever I wanted to talk about, but it is all connected. And it is interesting also, there's a BTG article. That Srila Prabhupada, he started Back to Godhead with just this kind of article. He'd pick up something from the news and then comment on it on the light of Bhagavad Gita. So that's another thought. It's a very good way to preach, that people are interested in the news. Not everyone, but many people are interested. Actually, everyone's interested in news. Not everyone's interested in the political news, but many people are interested in the sports news. Someone told me, was it in Croatia, there's a daily sports newspaper? You told me that. Just for sports. At least when I was a kid in England, they didn't have daily sports news, although in certain papers, about half the paper is taken up by sport.
This is going on for, 40 years.
For 40 years, they have a sports paper. No wonder.
Sports kind of actually two.
Yeah, two.
Two
sport newspapers.
One was here in Zagreb. And
it was
in Belgrade.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty difficult to relate sports issues. Spain won the World Cup football. Palladnad Maharaj. See, he's got nothing to. He's got no interest in it whatsoever. I can tell that for sure. I mean, apart from being an ISKCON sannyasi, he's from America. And in America, what do they care about? Soccer. But he knew all of course, he knew all about it. So you just can't avoid it, right? It's just like all over. I stopped reading the newspaper because it was just all the World Cup. But I also found out, because after it was over, I again opened the newspaper on the internet and it says something like Spanish heroes return home to tumultuous welcome or something. Then I understood they won the World Cup. So it's pretty difficult to link all that to Krishna consciousness, and it's pretty dull. But there are many issues, just like ecological issues. In America and Britain, many people are very, they're not at all happy that their countries are sending, or they have troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're not happy with that. What right have we? And our men are getting killed, and we're paying for it. Huge amounts they have to pay. And then there's the whole economic wind down that's going on. So there are many things that devotees can comment on in a way that can, but with a completely different angle. Totally different. So that was one technique that Srila Prabhupada adopted for preaching. So there's a few thoughts on Glenn Hoddle and the problem of spastics. Why are there spastics? There can't be any God. If there was God, he would never have made spastics. No, there must be God. We believe in God. But he made everything. Why do they make spastics? Don't know. They have nothing else to say. We can give a different answer, better answer. Yeah. Any question, comment, please, or anyone want to join the chorus against Glenn Hoddle, who's now forgotten. Probably in England now, if you say Glenn Hoddle, they've probably forgotten him also. 1999, he was the England soccer manager up to 1999, and probably completely forgotten now. Even the great David Beckham, probably in last kids in 10 years' time, they've probably never heard of him. It'll be someone else. There's always someone else. Who's the next up-and-coming star? When I was a kid, the famous soccer stars, George Best, Bobby Charlton. Maybe they're known, I don't know. What is it? I remember we used to sell books, Prabhupada's book, the Krishna book, showing the name of George Harrison. Everyone knew him. It was great for selling the Krishna book in England. But a few years ago, a devotee told me that if you say, that we used to start off our line when we met people, like, you've heard of George Harrison, haven't you? And of course they all say yes, because they all have and they all like him. So immediately you get a positive, you know, when you're selling books, you have to say question, give questions to them. They keep on saying yes, 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 yes. So when you say, well, take the book and give a donation, they also say yes. It's like they're in the mood of saying. But one devotee told me, you asked the kids in England, this was like 10, 15 years ago, you heard of George Harrison, haven't you? Who? What? That's the way the entertainment industry works. As long as you're entertaining, then as long as you're active and you're popular, then you're known. And then after that, forgotten. That's all. And they need ever new heroes. We have a Nitya Navayamana. Krishna is always fresh. Doesn't grow old. He doesn't die. He doesn't become unpopular, except among mentally retarded people. Yeah, so anything. Yes, please.
Christian's idea about spastics is even more bizarre because they
say... Oh yeah, well, you know what they say.
The parents are actually guilty.
The parents are guilty to have children like that. They did something wrong. So the Christians also believe in karma in this life. It doesn't all depend on your... What's that?
The family is condemned, you know, like that.
The whole family is condemned. But you get good Catholics who give their money to the church every Sunday.
Explanation I heard.
And they also have spastic children. Then it's a test from God, like Job, right?
Yeah.
Just to prove, you have in the Bible, just to prove how what a great devotee Job is, then God gave him one trial after another. Yeah.
Regarding this, then they come to the conclusion that because how we believe in God, that He created like this, so they conclude God is there, but He doesn't care for this world.
That's another theory. God is, He started the world, He doesn't really care about it that much, so He just left it alone. He went off.
No, He cares, but Satan is there.
Satan is there. It's all Satan's work.
He's kind of
God's competitor. Another nonsense idea. God struggling with Satan is a really hard job, but in the end He just manages to get on top of him. But in this world, Satan's having a good time. Yeah, I mean, it's just all ridiculous. It's not surprising that people become atheists. If this is presented as theism,
it's a really like sad effect. I read recently, a few years ago, that they find some letters, some exchange between Mother Teresa and some bishop.
Right, right. Mother Teresa, she herself didn't. She was expressing so much doubt that God even exists.
Exists at all.
That was her private. She had like her counselor, and she confided to her counselor that she wasn't really sure whether God exists or not.
And she sang.
After seeing that mess in Calcutta.
No, Calcutta always made me. I lived in Calcutta. I was in and out of Calcutta for years, and always gave me great faith in God, and in such a chaos, and how it goes on day after day, you think the whole thing would just sink into the end. It's just totally chaotic, but somehow or other life goes on. So for me, Calcutta is a great proof of the existence of God. There must be someone up there who's holding it all together. Otherwise, it's bizarre, you know. The telephone doesn't work. If you can get through, then the operators... You can get through to the operator, then you can't hear them, and then they're rude to you. And you know, there's a complete traffic jam, non-stop traffic. Then when there's rain, the whole city... Everyone's just walking waist-deep in water. Things have improved since then. So many bizarre things. Anyway, if you talk about Calcutta, you could go on for hours. There's so many things. I remember seeing some guy just in, you know, dirty, covered in rags, lying flat on his back on the pavement with holding a puppy which was tied up to him, and just like torturing the puppy, holding it up, making it wah, wah, scream, and then everyone's just walking past, no one cares at all, you know. Early in the morning, if you go down to Bora Bazaar, you'll see these pygmies who have no hands and legs rolling to work. They get into their begging spot before the crowds come. So many strange things. So many strange things. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Do you think Glenn Hoddle's worth a jai? Believes in reincarnation, I guess. It's a good start for him.
44 years later. Al Brandy apologized. He's also must be dead by now. It's 44 years ago.
Our Gopal Bhatta last year distributed some books to recently, I mean, also that period, you know, 1990s. When was it? 2000? There was a World Soccer Cup. There was a
Gopal Bhatta. Which Gopal Bhatta?
You decide. Croatian. He was a Croatian player, and he was like the best player known in the world. In India, everybody knows about him.
Really?
Now Shukar. So he distributed books to him.
Go to West Bengal, some remote village, and then offer him. I was shocked by
him. He's from a remote village, that guy?
No. Go to West Bengal in a remote village.
They know.
The guy approached me and said, Shukar.
You said Croatia.
Yeah, you say you are from Croatia. Oh, Davor Shukar. Or Goran Ivanišević, this tennis player. So Gopal Bhatta said that this man was like complete, stupid guy, redneck,
I remember in Bangladesh, it was like, I don't know about in the villages, but like they were mad over Maradona.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Bangladesh. It's crazy. In Los Angeles, for years they were working the LAX airport. And all the time, it was just very common, they'd meet celebrities, Hollywood celebrities. Film stars, rock stars, it was just like almost daily. And politicians, all kinds of famous people, and give books to them if they could, because they all have bodyguards and they don't generally let you get close. Muhammad Ali was one. They gave him a book in LAX. So many. The airport distribution but when it began, the airport book distribution, it was like that. Higher class of society is called the jet set, but now in America now it's just normal. Everyone flies here. If it's more than a, but still some people drive long distances. There's not any cheaper to drive.
We had this Bakta Mirenko.
Right, he was a football player. Was he Croatian national team?
Well, he wasn't, but he was quite famous. He was playing
in
in the first league.
In Italy.
He was playing in Italy and then he came to Croatia.
He was in the first league in Italy, that's...
Yeah, Sampdoria.
Anyway. I remember there was one Liverpool football player who was doing a university degree. Well, he was like 20 years old, and he was doing a degree and playing for them. It was like big news, you know, a footballer getting a degree. It's like, because you just expect them to be stupid, right?
Yeah.
But in America, they have sports degrees. If you're good at sport, you go to university just to do the sport.
Mm.
And you get a degree for being a, like, I don't know.
They have this Yeah, we have also social.
Yeah. They call it university degree, at least in other. You don't get a degree for playing tennis or something. It's supposed to be something. Well, I guess you know, the brain is also used to some extent in sports. It's not really intellectual, is it? Hare Krishna.
2-3 days back, there was a kind of sensational news in the Indian cricket team. Some devotee sent a mail that India was about to lose the match, and this fellow, you know, was always played in crisis, and then he brought, he made the Indian team win the match, and then and the post in the interview, he said that.
Sai Baba. Was it?
He said that I always read Bhagavad Gita. It became a sensation. Some devotee said we have to go and give Bhagavad Gita asset.
Who is that? What was his name?
His name is V.V.S. Lakshman.
From South India?
He's from Andhra, Hyderabad.
It's not, it wouldn't be surprising if Bhagavad Gita was it is, because it's far the most distributed. In Andhra, Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then there's some Sundar Chaitanya's Bhagavad Gita is very popular there also. Some Mayavadi.
Gita Press as well.
Gita Press, yeah, I know so much. Many people read Sundar Chaitanya's Gita Makarandam in Andhra. But definitely Prabhupada's Gita as it is widely known. This Ambani, who's the older brother? Mukesh Ambani, I think is the older one.
Yes, it's Mukesh.
So, you know, he lavishes gifts for his wife. He gave her a jumbo jet or something as a birthday present. And then she wanted to have an edition of Bhagavad Gita to give to all their friends, but they approached the BBT to publish like a super edition with gold binding just for the 1,000 copies or something. And then Bhima asked her that why this edition of Gita? He said, well, if you think of Gita, it has to be Bhagavad Gita as it is. That's what she said. That's what Bhima told me. I remember seeing in the newspaper some big shot in Maharashtra was going to court and he was carrying his Bhagavad Gita as it is in the photo. Variety edition. It's having its impact.
Of course.
Whatever, you know, all the problems in ISKCON, it's like in Germany, the movement's such a mess. But then there's some devotees, they just, you know, like new devotees. A few years ago, they just decided, well, we'll just have our own little centers and distribute books, and they just didn't bother with, you know, GBC, okay, hi, go, have a good time, but they just didn't get involved in all that. They just went on distributing books, and they're in bliss, and they're making more devotees, and, you know, there's still, there's all this, the main ISKCON is still, you know, all new age, and weird, and all this, but they just have their little centers, and they do book distribution, and they're in bliss. And it's in the long run, that's what's going to matter. As Prabhupada said in China, that even he said, just somehow or other distribute books, if you can't go there, that will have its effect. And apparently Prabhupada said that even if all the devotees were to leave, as long as my books are there, it's okay. New people will come. So, maybe the best response to all the problems in ISKCON Croatia is just because you have to get the books first of all. That's one of the problems. But just emphasize on this. It's like the It's like our Harinama book distribution. You can't go wrong. Krishna will be pleased. Even if it's misinterpreted, misused, the funds are misused, this, that, and the other. If the books are distributed, Krishna will be pleased. And it will have its effect. Okay, Hare Krishna.
It sounded like the lecture.
Yeah.
Especially not in mainstream media, but maybe in alternative medias, there's quite a lot of talk of these conspiracy theories. Is there, what should the devotees say, like if someone's asking, like...
About conspiracy theories? Yeah, sure, like there's always someone trying to...
Demons are doing this for, they are convincing, but they are polluting the air, doing so many things, are they just in ignorance or they purposely do this?
They may be purposely doing it. If they are, what are you going to do about it? And even if you remove one set of demons, you expose them, you remove them, what's to say another set won't come in? There's always someone trying to control. Someone's always controlling directly or indirectly. So what's the point? Just do our business. There's no use for us to try to remove them. It's just like, your French Revolution, you throw out the king and then the mess became worse. You see here in Croatia also, under Dayalu, the temple was, there were complaints against him in Zagreb. They threw him out and whatever he was, there was some, he was respected, he was holding everything together. And then since then, it's just been chaos and a breakdown. Prithu in Ireland also, they got some recently. He did so much there, were complaints against him. They threw him out, and then he's never been the same. For all his faults, he was a dynamic leader who got things done. And he's just gone down and down ever since. So, revolution isn't always the solution. It's easy to point out what's wrong, but having done that, you have to get the thing right. Otherwise, you see in the Kali world also, they have revolutions and then they don't like the next leader and they throw him out also, and it just goes on and on. I regarding the situation in Croatia, I'm for change at the present point. I don't think we should keep these corrupt people in position. But the point is that it's not enough simply to tear the present leadership down, but you have to put competent people in. Sometimes a competent, corrupt person is better than an incompetent, honest person. I've seen that in Bangladesh. When I was there, President Zia, he was shot. He was said to be corrupt. Yeah, well, he was corrupt. But then they brought in this completely ineffectual justice who people trusted to be a good man, and the country just became chaotic. At least when Zia was there, he was managing the economy and it was some kind of law and order. But then afterwards, there was this weak person, well-intentioned weak person, like Jimmy Carter in America. He was well-intentioned, nice guy, but weak. And he didn't serve America's interests as well. Leader needs to be strong. At the present time in Croatia, the leaders are neither strong nor giving any kind of proper direction, and they're corrupt. No advantage. Certain leaders. There's no advantage to having them whatsoever. All right, Hare Krishna.
Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur complained about some temple president who took some money.
He was corrupt, but Bhagavan said he's managing well.
Yes. And he smashed the brahmacharis.
44 years later, Al Brandy apologized. He's also must be dead by now. It's 44 years ago.
Our Gopal Bhatta last year distributed some books to
recently, I mean, also that period, you know, 1990s, when was it, 2000, there was a World Soccer Cup, there was a...
Copa Alberta? Which Copa Alberta?
You decide. Croatian, he was a Croatian player, and he was like the best player known in the world. In India, everybody knows about him.
Really?
Davor Šuker. So he distributed books to him.
Go to West Bengal, some remote village, and then offer him. I was shocked by
him. He's from a remote village, that guy?
No. Go to West Bengal, in a remote village.
They know.
The guy approached me and said, Šuker.
You said Croatia.
Yeah, you say you are from Croatia. Oh, Davor Šuker. Or Goran Ivanišević, this tennis player. So Gopal Bhatta said that this man was like complete, stupid guy, redneck, just.
I remember in Bangladesh, it was like, I don't know about in the villages, but like they were mad over Maradona.
Yeah.
He's
awesome.
Bangladesh. It's crazy. In Los Angeles, for years they were working the LAX airport. And devote all the time, it's just very common, they'd meet celebrities, Hollywood celebrities. Film stars, rock stars. It was just like almost daily. And politicians, all kinds of famous people, they'd give books to them if they could, because they all have bodyguards and they don't generally let you get close. Muhammad Ali was one. They gave him a book in LAX. So many. The airport distribution. But when it began, the airport book distribution, it was like the higher class of society. It was called the jet set. But then in America now, it's just normal. Everyone flies here. If it's more than a... Well, still some people drive long distances. It's not any cheaper to drive.
We had this Bakhtar Milenko.
Right, he was a football player. Was he in Croatian national team?
Well, he wasn't, but he was quite famous. He was playing in the first league.
In Italy?
He was playing in Italy and then he came to Croatia.
He was in the first league in Italy? That's...
Yeah, Sampdoria.
Anyway. I remember there was one Liverpool football player who was doing a university degree. Well, he was like 20 years old, and he was doing a degree and playing for them. It was like big news, a footballer getting a degree. It's like, because you just expect them to be stupid, right?
Yeah.
But in America, they have sports degrees. If you go to sport, you go to university just to do the sport. Mm. And you get a degree for being like, I don't know.
They have this.
Yeah, we have also such a...
They call it university degree, at least in other... You don't get a degree for playing tennis or something. It's supposed to be something... Well, I guess the brain is also used to some extent in sports, right? It's not really intellectual, is it? Hare Krishna.
2-3 days back, there was a kind of sensational news in Indian cricket team. Some devotee sent a mail that India was about to lose the match, and this fellow was always played in crisis, and then he brought he made the Indian team win the match, and then and the post in the interview he said that
Sai Baba. Was it?
He said that I always read Bhagavad Gita. It became a sensation. Some devotee said we have to go and give Bhagavad Gita.
Who was that? What was his name?
His name is V.V.S. Lakshman.
From South India?
He's from Andhra, Hyderabad.
It wouldn't be surprising if Bhagavad Gita as it is, because it's far the most distributed. In Andhra, Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then there's some Sundar Chaitanya's Bhagavad Gita is very popular there also. Some Mayavadi.
Gita Press is also.
Gita Press, yeah, I know so much. Many people read Sundar Chaitanya's Gita Makarandam in Andhra. But definitely Prabhupada's Gita as it is widely known in this Ambani, who's the older brother? Mukesh Ambani, I think, is the older one.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, he lavished his gifts for his wife. He gave her a jumbo jet or something as a birthday present. And then she wanted to have an edition of Bhagavad Gita to give to all their friends, but they approached the BBT to publish like a super edition with gold binding just for them, like 1,000 copies or something. And then Bhima asked her, why this edition of Gita? He said, well, if you think of Gita, it has to be Bhagavad Gita as it is. That's what she said. That's what Bhima told me. I remember seeing in the newspaper some big shot in Maharashtra was going to court and he was carrying his Bhagavad Gita as it is in the photo. We're out here. It's having its impact.
Of course.
Whatever, you know, all the problems in ISKCON, it's like in Germany, the movement's such a mess. But then there's some devotees, they just, like new devotees, a few years ago, they just decided, well, we'll just have our own little centers and distribute books, and they just didn't bother with, the GBC, okay, hi, go, have a good time, but they just didn't get involved in all that. They just went on distributing books, and they're in bliss, and they're making more devotees, and there's all this. The main ISKCON is still, all new age and weird and all this, but they just have their little centers and they do book distribution and they're in bliss. And it's in the long run, that's what's going to matter. As Prabhupada said in China, that even he said, just somehow or distribute books, if you can't go there, that will have its effect. And apparently, Prabhupada said that even if all the devotees were to leave, as long as my books are there, it's okay. New people will come. So, maybe the best response to all the problems in ISKCON Croatia is just because you have to get the books first of all. That's one of the problems. But just emphasize on this. It's like our Harinama book distribution. It's our last resort. You can't go wrong. Krishna will be pleased. Even if it's misinterpreted, misused, the funds are misused, this, that, and the other. The books are distributed, Krishna will be pleased. It will have its effect. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Who's going to give a show? The lecture.
Yeah?
Especially not in mainstream media, but maybe in alternative media. There's quite a lot of talk of these conspiracy theories. Is there, what should the devotees say, like if someone's asking, like...
About conspiracy theories? Yeah, sure, like there's always someone trying
demons
to...
Demons are doing this for, they are convincing, but they are polluting the air and doing so many things. Are they just in ignorance or they purposely do this?
They may be purposely doing it. If they are, what are you going to do about it? And even if you remove one set of demons... You expose them, you remove them. What's to say another set won't come in? There's always someone trying to control. Someone's always controlling directly or indirectly. So what's the point? Just do our business. There's no use for us to try to remove them. It's just like, your French Revolution, you throw out the king and then the mess became worse. You see here in Croatia also, under Dayalu, the temple was, there were complaints against him in Zagreb. They threw him out and whatever he was, there was some, he was respected, he was holding everything together. And then since then, it's just been chaos and a breakdown. Prithu in Ireland also, they got some recently. He did so much there, there were complaints against him. They threw him out, and then he's never been the same. For all his faults, he was a dynamic leader who got things done. And it's just gone down and down ever since. So, revolution isn't always the solution. It's easy to point out what's wrong, but having done that, you have to get the thing right. Otherwise, you see in the karmic world also, they have revolutions, and then they don't like the next leader, and they throw him out also, and it just goes on and on. I regarding the situation in Croatia, I'm for change at the present point. I don't think we should keep these corrupt people in position. But the point is that it's not enough simply to tear the present leadership down, but you have to put competent people in. Sometimes a competent, corrupt person is better than an incompetent, honest person. I've seen that in Bangladesh. When I was there, President Zia, he was shot. He was said to be corrupt. But then they brought in this completely ineffectual justice who people trusted to be a good man, and the country just became chaotic. At least when Zia was there, he was managing the economy and it was some kind of law and order. But then afterwards, there was this weak person, well-intentioned weak person, like Jimmy Carter in America. He was well-intentioned, nice guy, but weak. And he didn't serve America's interests as well. Leader needs to be strong. At the present time in Croatia, the leaders are neither strong nor giving any kind of proper direction, and they're corrupt. There's no advantage. Certainly, there's no advantage to having it whatsoever. All right, Hare Krishna.
Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur complained about some temple president who takes too so
much.